Kansas City has now had two African-American mayors and black elected officials in city, county, and state government. But this progress didn't happen by chance. A new film by Emile Cleaver called Freedom Now documents the history of the nation's oldest African-American political organization, Freedom Incorporated. It's a story of how the black community organized to battle racism, organized crime, and intimidation in a fierce fight for political representation. Emile Cleaver's name might sound familiar. He is the son of former mayor and current congressman Emmanuel Cleaver. He joined Susan in the studio to talk about his film.
Well, I was taking a master's class at UMKC, the Kansas City Black Experience, and we had to write a paper on an organization or a person dealing with black history in Kansas City. And I decided to write a paper on Freedom Incorporated. And when I started doing research, I couldn't find anything. There wasn't enough information out there to write a paper. So I decided to do a documentary. I felt that Freedom was an important organization and there needed to be some type of documentation out there to let future generations know about Freedom.
I imagine you probably had some experiences as a youth with Freedom. What were some of your memories of Freedom as a youth, and what kinds of things were you involved in?
As a youngster, I really wasn't interested in doing any of the canvassing or anything, but my brother and I were involved at a young age. We would go out and pass out flyers and things like that, go door to door, talk to people about voting, and we were just little kids, but as I got older, I saw the importance of an organization like Freedom. But as a youngster, I really wasn't too concerned with doing all that work. I just wanted to play basketball.
Now, did you run into any obstacles getting people to participate in your video project?
No. A lot of people were excited to do it. They were excited to tell the story. I started out interviewing Mr. Fred Curls, who was the only living founding member, and a lot of members who had been around since the 60s and 70s. So I didn't really have any problem finding people to interview.
Now, the film starts kind of at the beginning in the Pendergast era, where organized crime was very prominent. And it kind of points out the connection between organized crime and politics. So I'm going to play a clip now of somebody that you know pretty well.
Many people in Kansas City, particularly young people, don't realize that Kansas City has historically been the most powerful most powerful mafia city outside of Chicago in the nation. In fact, during the heyday of the mob, Kansas City actually controlled the Las Vegas casinos. It belonged to the Kansas City family.
The picture that's painted in the documentary is a picture of African Americans who were powerless to change a political process that really didn't include them. In your research, what did you learn about that period in terms of how it affected the African American community at that time?
Well, I learned that during that period, the early 60s and before that, organized crime kind of dictated who would hold an office and represent that ward, which was predominantly African American. They used intimidation, bribery to get people elected. And at one point, Leon Jordan and Bruce Watkins ran against each other. They both lost. They canceled out each other's votes. So the organized crime candidate won. So after that, they decided to come together and form an organization together. They knew together they were more powerful and they could get more votes. So that was how they formed. And it wasn't easy after they started to form this organization. I mean, there were organized crime members didn't want to give up that power. So they ran into a lot of difficulties.
So Leon Jordan and Bruce Watkins, but there were five founders, right?
Well, actually, there were seven founders. There are five founders in the picture signing the documents of incorporation. Leon Jordan, Bruce Watkins, Howard Maupin, Dr. Charles Moore, and Fred Kurls. The two founders who aren't in that picture are Leonard Hughes II and Marion Foote.
As you think about the founders, what qualities did they bring to the table, each of them, I'm thinking, because they each brought different skill sets that enabled them to be eventually successful against a powerful political machine?
Well, Leon Jordan was a leader. Bruce R. Watkins was charismatic. You know, he was liked by everyone. Howard Maupin owned a barbershop on Prospect, so he had access to a lot of people. So he used his connections at the barbershop to get people involved. Leonard Hughes was an attorney, so he knew the legal process to go through to get it incorporated. Now, I really didn't find out too much about Dr. Charles Moore or Marion Foote. Fred Kurls, he was in real estate, so he had a lot of, I guess, connections through that.
Now, as you mentioned, change didn't come very easily, because really the initial plan, as I understood it from your documentary, was to take over the 14th Ward. How bad did it get in terms of the fear and intimidation factor?
Well, I mean, I think it got pretty bad, but because they didn't back down, they were able to overcome that. But there are clips in the documentary where Bishop Tindall, who was a former president of Freedom, he talks about how the North End, which is what the mafia was called, the North End would come, pull out money and pay people to go into the polls and vote their way. So there was a lot of obstacles to overcome, but, you know, they were able to do it. And at one point, many people believe that was the reason why Leon Jordan was killed, because they took that power away from the North End.
The documentary talks about that in 1964, there was very limited access to public accommodations. And Freedom played a role even before the Public Accommodations Act was passed. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, Freedom organized and registered voters to get public accommodations downtown. The churches were heavily involved. There were a lot of social clubs that were involved. But we were able to get public accommodations here in Kansas City 18 months before Lyndon Johnson signed the public accommodations bill in 1964. And a lot of that had to do with Freedom Incorporated.
Now, you mentioned earlier that some speculate, and actually with some of the new findings about the murder of Leon Jordan, I think they were correct, that standing up to organized crime meant paying a price and that his murder may have had something to do with it. In your research, how did his death affect Freedom?
Well, I think it made him stronger. You know, everyone that I talked to about that said that after that, it really kind of brought them together and made them stronger. Bruce Watkins took over after that, and they just continued to grow. Actually, after his death, Freedom Incorporated became more powerful. His death was a blow, of course, to Freedom, but really it just made him stronger.
Now, most of the movers and shakers in early Freedom were men, which was interesting. Why do you think that was? And I guess the second part of my question is, what roles did women play in Freedom and getting political clout in the community?
I can only guess that the reason that the men were the most prominent figures is because it was a different period, the 1960s. And I guess women were still kind of fighting for certain rights. But there were women involved. Like I said, Marion Foote was one of the founders. Rosemary Lowe was around since the beginning. Edith Haney Galvin was actually the first president of Young Freedom. And Young Freedom was started shortly after Freedom was formed. And it was a group of young people that were kind of groomed to be politicians or leaders in the community. And that was headed by Mr. Fred Kurls.
Now, some of those young people back then are people's names that we would recognize today as elected officials, right?
Right. Phil Curls, who was a state senator, Archie Welch, who was a former president, Harold Doc Holliday was on the city council as well as a state representative, and also Charles Hasley, who was on the city council for 20 years, I believe. He was involved with Young Freedom.
Once Freedom was able to gain ground in terms of organizing the black community, and I know they had control over more and more wards, what were some of the accomplishments, let's say, in the 80s, 90s, and beyond?
Well, they were able to get a lot of judges appointed, which was a big deal, of course. They were able to get the first African-American elected as mayor. They were also able to get Alan Wheat elected as a United States congressman, and which was in a predominantly white district. So those were some of the biggest accomplishments. They were able to work with Senator Tom Eagleton and a lot of other people. At one point during the 80s and early 90s, every politician really needed Freedom's endorsement to get elected. They were known for winning elections. And, you know, if a candidate lost an election, it was because they didn't get the votes outside of the Freedom wards, because Freedom, they got the people organized and they got those votes.
Well, you know, which begs a question. Freedom was very powerful in getting black elected officials elected. And yet we fast forward to now and we have a black mayor that got elected, I think, without the help of Freedom. I mean, I know he wasn't endorsed initially by Freedom. Thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, it's a different period. Freedom is still a strong organization, but they're not probably as strong as they used to be because a lot of those people have moved out to the suburbs. I mean, at one point, you know, pretty much all the African Americans were in one area. So they kind of needed Freedom, and Freedom became strong because of that. But now, you know, we have people out in Grandview, Raytown, and all these suburbs, and it kind of, I think, hurt Freedom's political clout. And yeah, the mayor wasn't originally endorsed by Freedom, I believe, not in the primary, but in the general election he was.
Speaking of that kind of challenge, you know, that the base, if you will, has moved kind of to the first tier suburbs. How do you think Freedom will meet that kind of challenge since things have changed?
Well, I asked a lot of people that, and they think that the key is to get younger people involved, college students, to get them involved in the political process, just like when they first started with Young Freedom. And I think they need to reach out to the suburbs as well, maybe set up some type of base in the suburbs to connect with those people. But I think the key is getting younger people involved, letting them know about the history, because a lot of people are living in an era where they see a black mayor and they don't know the struggles that it took to get him elected, or seeing a congressman and they don't know the struggles that it took to make that happen. So letting them know about our history and kind of teaching them, grooming them to be leaders in the community.
How do you respond to critics who might say, well, the film on Freedom paints a rosy picture, a very complimentary picture of an organization without talking about its flaws? And some of the flaws have been public.
Right. You know, there is I've heard that already from people who haven't seen the film. But I don't have a problem with that. You know, Freedom is an important organization, period. They have done a lot of things to help African-Americans in Kansas City. So I wanted to point those things out. There are a lot of leaders, historical figures who have done great things, and people don't point out their flaws. I mean, we just celebrated a person who a national holiday of a person who fits that example. And the reason is they've done more good than they've done bad. So I wanted to point that out. And this is the first work done about freedom. So the first historical account of this organization, I wanted to point out the positive things that they've done. Now, in the future, I'm sure that someone will talk about the good and the bad. But I wanted to point out the good that they've done.
That was Emil Cleaver, filmmaker and owner of Davenport Media and Film. His documentary, Freedom Now, will premiere on Friday evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library.
After the break, the last of our Server Tell All series, where we hear about Kansas City dining from the waiter's perspective. This is Casey Currents.